Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Friday, January 20th, 2017. And you know what that means? It means Valentine's Day is only 3 weeks away.
Lol.
It means
maybe we should just do a Valentine's episode instead of talking about today.
Yeah. Let's just talk ahead. Like, you know, what do you usually get your sweetheart on Valentine's Day?
What are we
going
to do for Valentine's Day?
Nothing.
Nothing, because it's a fucking bullshit holiday. Anyway. I'm Rachel.
I'm Travis. And some technical updates for you. This probably sounds a lot better. There's not like clicking and beeping and horrible noises in the background. It's because we've upgraded the equipment here that is allowing us to lounge on the couch.
We're literally like laying down on this one because
we're laying down on the job.
Fuck this day. Fuck today. I'm not having it. And so Travis and I are laying on the couch.
We may have had a couple drinks.
Uh-huh. And we're recording this podcast for you.
All for you. I know you're looking for like guidance and intelligence and a coherent plan of action of how to go forward, but I don't know whether we can deliver that now for this episode.
No, I have nothing. I have a lot of feelings and a lot of anxiety, and today was really fucking hard, but I don't have a lot of...
Well, let's be honest about today, right?
Yeah.
We both work.
Yes.
And we were not, even if had we wanted to, we would not have been able to watch the proceedings in D.C. Not for more than a couple minutes. Maybe. A
couple minutes here and there I could have watched.
Now, let me tell you, let's hearken back to a better time. In 2008, I happened to have a boss who was just super cool. So we essentially took half the day off and went to a Haitian cafe in Miami and watched the inauguration.
Wow.
And it was one of the most amazing days of my life.
Yeah, I was a student. And so I talked to all my professors and said, like, fuck you. And we, we watched it and we celebrated. And it was, again, one of the most celebratory days.
Now, there are probably some places where that kind of thing happened, where the bosses said, you know, everybody take off, or everybody come to my house and watch the inauguration. But not in our universe.
No.
Not in our orbit.
No.
Certainly.
No.
So we did not watch the inauguration.
No, I boycotted it entirely. Dana and I were driving to work this morning, and we have NPR as the thing we listen to when we drive to work. And I got about 30 seconds in and I was like, turn it off. Turn it the fuck off right now. I can't do this. I can't. Like, I have to go to work right now. I can't. And he was like, in this, like, what is the German Schadenfreude? The sort of like
Schadenfreude,
right? Mm-hmm. Place. And I was in a deep place of mourning. He shut it off. And then about 30 seconds later, he was like, oh no. And I was like, what? And he's like, you're right. This isn't fun.
No.
Or interesting. This is fucking horrible.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And then we just sort of drove in silence for a while. And every once in a while, one of us would have a big, deep, heavy sigh. We were listening to Fiona Apple and the Dresden Dolls and Melora Krieger and Rasputina and just all ladies.
How long was your drive to work?
Traffic was horrible because there were protests in downtown Denver, which is where we work.
Okay.
And so our drive was about 25 minutes today. And it was a somber drive. I was not in the mood for finding this entertaining or like, it's just going to be a shit show. No, I was just very like deeply in a state of like mourning and like it was bad. And it was that way all day.
So full disclosure, this is going to be a show mostly kind of about our feelings. It's not going to be about how the inauguration went. And
no, because we don't know. We don't
like
want to watch that shit.
Because
I'm not watching it. You can't make me fucking watch that shit. I refuse. I won't do it. I don't care. I don't. No.
So if that's what you wanted, then I'm sorry. Then this is not going to be the show for you.
No, I've got some stuff to talk about it that is
periphery and stuff.
We've
got stuff to talk about.
We're not just going to like have a feelings episode, but a lot of it's going to be about like, you know, what the fuck?
Yeah. And what do we do now? And
yeah, what are we doing tomorrow? And we'll talk about stuff. But
well, you did some stuff today. Do you want to get into that?
Yeah. So, okay. So I work at a big fancy law firm in downtown Denver. And I got a message last night from Colorado State Representative Paul Rosenthal, who was hosting a protest basically across the street from my building between 11:30 and 1:30. And mm-hmm. that's during my lunch break. And so I was like, this was last night. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to feel like shit tomorrow. Maybe I'll go. I'll go. Like, I'll go on my lunch break and I'll go hang out for a little bit, see Paul. And, you know, so I took my lunch break at 12:15 and went outside. And across the street, I could clearly see that there was some protests going on. It seemed to be a pretty small crowd. It was outside of this big. So I work in this basically like this district of just big fancy office buildings full of lawyers and banks and corporate interests and all kinds of stuff. And I wasn't exactly sure why we were protesting there, because it was against Cory Gardner, right?
Who's our Republican representative.
That's correct. And our senator.
Senator, sorry.
Yeah.
Wait, I thought he was a rep. The Kaufman was, no, you're
no.
Right. Kaufman's
yeah.
the House.
Yeah, Cory Gardner's a senator, Republican senator, and he's the only one. And I guess he has some office in that building. And so people went to, just I guess a little backstory about Cory Gardner. He's been in the news lately in the past 3 or 4 days because a lot of people have been trying to reach him by phone, by email, and in person to talk to him about the Affordable Care Act and about these confirmation hearings and all of that stuff. And he's been dodging his constituents. Like in the media, they watch him back, go out back doors and get in big SUVs and literally dodge his constituents. You can't call him. He doesn't answer any emails, not even a form letter. It's kind of, I think it's going to hit national news because it's kind of like
bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to say something.
Why don't you tell me why don't you tell me if these are such deeply held convictions that you have, why don't you tell me why you're going to vote to repeal Obamacare? Why don't you listen to my story and maybe like listen to the thousands of other people's stories that are your constituents about why we don't want you to do that?
Or, well, he couldn't do it either way. Like if he was going to vote for it or not, he's been promising to repeal it
right.
for so long. So he couldn't face the constituents that voted for him because he promised to repeal it, and he can't face the constituents who he will take away their health care from them.
So he's just dodging. But yeah. No other senator is doing this. Like everyone's meeting with people.
Yeah, they're at least giving stock answers or bullshit
yeah,
answers.
Exactly. Or their staff is at least.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So he's completely like, no, I'm not talking to the voters. I'm not going to do it. And so Paul Rosenthal and some other people organized this protest in addition to the fact that Cory Gardner is a huge Trump supporter and was the entire time and sure. is like he's a sycophant for Trump. So we wanted to go talk to him. So the protest started at 11:30 and was supposed to end at 1:30. I didn't get there till like 12:30. And by the time I got there, there was no organization at that point. I think it may have been over. I think that like Paul Rosenthal and the people that maybe organized this had already done their thing or whatever. And I was sort of left with this motley bunch of delightful people with a lot of them had bandanas over their faces and Guy mm-hmm. Fawkes masks. There's a big rainbow flag. There was impeach the con man signs. There was a lot of no DAPL signs. There's a lot of, you know, keep your hand off my pussy signs, stuff like that. But it was probably like 25 or 30 people. So I went down and I hung out and there were lots of cops that basically just were standing around. And at one point they decided to break up the protest in front of this building because it was blocking the entrance to this big fancy building with tons of banks and shit in it. So they moved us down the sidewalk. There were several news cameras and people there. They weren't interviewing anyone when I was there, but they were videotaping it. So we got down the street and this guy in a hippie van with a giant banner hanging out the window that said fuck Trump started playing really loudly on his speakers with his doors and windows open fuck the police. And one of the org, there was this guy named Miguel, and he had like this big yellow hoodie on with black lettering printed on it that said lead event organizer. And so he was kind of had this very serious face, and he was sort of like, you know, to and fro trying to figure out what we were doing. And then this cute girl with purple hair came over, and her two friends started chanting, no Trump, no KKK, no fascist USA,
mm-hmm.
which has kind of become the chant of the protesters for Trump. And people started doing that for a while. Some guy got out a drum. And then where we were, it's a pretty major, it's in the middle of downtown Denver, in the middle of the business district. 16th Street Mall, if you guys are familiar. So they blocked off with the hippie van and two other cars. They blocked off this major intersection, which was at Arapahoe and 17th in Denver. And then fire trucks came and cops came, and they didn't try to disrupt the protesters because at this point they decided to march.
Right.
Because we couldn't stand outside the building and we couldn't get into Cory Gardner's office and nobody would talk to us. So they decided, well, we'll just march. So they blocked off this intersection so that everyone could get across the street safely. And the cops and the firefighters, to their credit, were not trying to disrupt that from happening. They were trying to ensure the safety of people on the street and also to make sure that no one like crashed into those cars that were blocking the intersection.
Right.
So two fire trucks came and blocked the intersection just outside of the cars that were already doing so. One thing I thought was really great, and I hope is continued throughout these protests, particularly tomorrow, is that they had two cars for people who wanted to march but wouldn't be able to actually make the march. So
right.
it was very like able body privilege
right.
Aware.
Right.
So if you want to march with us but you can't make it, we'll just drive alongside and you can still be in the march. And I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they began to march. I had to go back to work. I didn't know how long it was going to be, or like, I didn't want to get lost.
So how long were you there? Like an hour?
I was there for about 40 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. While I was there, it was really funny. There was this youngish.
Did you say Molly was there? Oh, I thought you said Molly was there.
No, while I was there.
Oh, while you were there.
While I was there. Molly will be there tomorrow.
We'll talk about tomorrow.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But while I was there, there was this German couple with their kid. They were in their like late 30s. Dude was holding this cute little girl and they're speaking in German and I'm standing next to them because I'm by myself, you know. And at one point, the German woman looks at me and says, "What is happening? Like, what is this?" And I said, "Oh, it's Inauguration Day." And she said, "I don't know that word." And I said, "Oh, it's the day that Trump becomes the president. He gets sworn in today." And she's like translating to the dude. And she goes, "Oh, and Americans are mad?" And I said, "Yes, very mad. Very mad. Yes." And she said, "But you have a democracy, right?" And I said, "Yeah, yes, it's complicated, but most of us are very unhappy that he got elected." And she said, "Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good that Americans are mad." And I said, "Yeah, I think so too." And then they started speaking in German, and so I sort of moved on. And then this weird lady came and talked to me about this film festival she was going to do, which I was like, "Cool." And she's like, "Yeah, it's like an artist commune thing." And I was like, "Cool." And then she's like, you know, it's a weird old hippie lady. She's like, "You can look at our website. Right now it has a Christmas thing on it, but we're going to update it soon. It's a liberal conservative website. Does that exist?" And I was like, "What?" And she's like, "We're really against fuck Trump. Just don't use expletives." And I was like, and she's like, "Just more positive, like pro something rather than fuck something." And I was like, "Okay, I'm good. But good. I mean, whatever. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it takes all kinds.
You know, it's fine. I don't know.
Something Christmas and don't use the F word, but I'm going to use it in casual
And it's a liberal conservative website. Aren't I adorable that exists? Like, gross. I don't know what that means. Okay. Don't say fuck. We're not going to get along. Fuck's every other word that I say.
Yeah. Try not to fucking say fuck so much for fuck's sake, Rachel.
Fucking Christ, Rachel. Stop saying fuck so fucking much.
Look, if there's ever a time to use profanity, it's now, lady.
Yeah. And then they started chanting fuck Trump, and she was like, just had this like little sourpuss face on, just like old rich white lady who thinks she's going to be an artist, you know, who missed the '70s kind of.
Yeah.
That's her. And so I was
and
like,
who really doesn't right. like profanity.
No, please don't say reason. Fuck. It's very bad. Be positive. I'm like, about what?
You could use fuck in the positive. Like, fucking A, that was great.
Fucking A, that was amazing. Yeah. No, I don't know. What's there to be positive about right now? Why would I?
Yeah.
Can't you be for, like, you know, the future of the country? I'm like, I don't think, no.
Yeah, I'm for fuck Trump.
Yeah. I like she said, I don't like that word fuck. And I said, oh, I love it. And she was like, oh.
You didn't tell me about this before.
No, I haven't told you about a couple of the people I met. So that was... That was interesting. Unfortunately, I had to go back to work. I'd have loved to march with them all the way. But again, it felt like maybe the organizational leadership had left. I did not see my representative. He's not my representative. I just know him. But Paul Rosenthal there. Or like, it was a little bit of a motley crew by the time I got there. And I don't know if they knew where they were marching or where they were.
It's going to be a motley ending. Crew tomorrow probably too.
Yeah.
I mean, most of these things are going to be... People in Guy Fawkes masks and hippies.
I don't know. The
and
Women's
drums
March?
And
I don't know. I feel like the Women's March is going to be.
Literally everybody I know is going to it.
Yeah.
Even my coworkers.
Oh, yeah. Mine too.
So should we get to that?
Yeah. Let's talk about that. So the Women's March is Saturday.
By the time you hear this, it will have already happened.
Yes. And we will have already gone and we will give you an update about how it went and all of the things. And hopefully if I am not so lost in the raging and solidarities with my sisters, I can take some pictures, but, that we can post, but, we are going, obviously, Dana, Travis, Brenna, Molly, me, a bunch of our friends, a bunch of our tribe, a bunch of our people, our coworkers, people I haven't seen in 20 years.
Gwen, who's been on the podcast.
Yeah,
to be
Gwen
there.
Is going to be there.
Jermaine, maybe.
I have no idea. Yeah, so tons of people. All of Travis's bandmates, I think,
yeah.
are going to be there.
Well, all but one who's got work, but.
Right.
And then two of my coworkers are going to be there. I can't name them, obviously.
Yeah, me too. Three of the lawyers I know are going. Two of the secretaries are going. I don't know who else because, you know, I try not to talk about that stuff that much with people. I'm not kind of close to at work because you never know. But it's going to be big. I mean, they initially thought it would be 20,000 people. They think it might be more like 40,000 people. It starts at... The meeting starts at 9, the like just sort of start meeting and getting it together at 9. The march starts at 9:30. It goes until 11 and it's a 1.3 mile walk with 40,000 people. And then it ends and there is then 30 different speakers who are going to speak. And that sounds like a lot, but they're all going to have about 5 minutes. And the woman that I worked to help elect in the election, Daphna Michelson-Janae,
who's been on the podcast twice.
She's one of the speakers, in addition to Representative Leslie Herod and like a bunch, just a bunch of, it's a, can I say, Denver has done as exceptional a job, I think, as DC has, as being intersectional as fuck and inclusive as fuck with what we're trying to say. This is not a white ladies march for equal pay thing.
Well,
this
see,
is,
I have a friend that is boycotting the march tomorrow because of that, because that's what she thinks it is.
Well, she should look at the speaker lineup in the mission statement.
Yeah.
Because
that's what I told
the
her.
Mission statement is explicit about intersectionality and inclusivity. And the
well,
speaker
that's
lineup.
What she said, that a lot of these things wind up being these privileged white women. And
there's going to be a shitload of white ladies walking tomorrow.
You're one of them.
I'm one of them. That does not mean I'm walking for white lady privilege.
No,
that
sure.
means I'm a woman with enough privilege that I have a Saturday off that I can go out and march and that I also feel safe enough to do so.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that I'm using, that also means to me that I'll be using that privilege that I have of being a white woman to advance the goals and rights and priorities of people who are less privileged than I am. And you as a white man are not going to further the white man agenda.
Definitely not.
You're going to use your privilege to, which supersedes all of ours, to further our rights and goals and priorities. And so if everybody can use their privilege to do that, I think that's powerful. And so I had this conversation today twice. One of my friends at work is a really delightful woman, and she voted for Trump, and she is a Christian, and I am not going to dog her at all because she's just the sweetest lady on earth and eminently reasonable, voted for Barack Obama twice. But I had a conversation with her and her husband, and I had just come back from the protest, and they were walking out to go have lunch together. They were going to have a celebratory lunch, right? And I like them both very much. He's a very sweet guy. And he's a union worker. He works railroads. And he was bitching about the protesters. And she knew I had just come from one. And she thinks it's kind of cool, right? And she's like, Brian, like, shh. And I was like, no. He's like, fucking protesters. And I was like, I'm going to the march tomorrow. And he was like, what's the point? You're not going to unelect Trump. And I said, no, the point of this is not to make Trump not the president. That's already happened. That's been done. The point of this is to have our voices heard. We, the people, we want to, I said, protesting is an American tradition. From the suffragettes, which gave women the right to vote, to the civil rights movement, which led to the Civil Rights Act, to every successful movement in the history of our country has involved protesting.
Yeah,
and a lot of them have worked.
Of course.
And it's the power of the American people to have their voices heard. And he looked at me, this conservative dude, and he said, well, shit, that's a really good reason. And I said, yeah. And he goes,
so it's like nobody ever talks reasonably to these people.
Correct. We talk down to them. We talk to them like they're fucking idiots and they're stupid and they don't matter and they don't, like, just talk to them about the reason that you're doing it and don't put it in a way that's like, oh, you stupid idiot, you must hate women.
Well, it's just hard,
say
it's hard
the
to
reason
do.
That protest, it's not, I'm the thing is, I'm used to it because of my dad. I know how to talk to these people.
Right.
And in a way that is not belittling and is not, you're a fucking idiot. It is, let me explain
but
it
you
to you in a
the,
way that you can understand.
The emotional impulse to do
of
that.
Of course I do.
Yeah.
Of course I do. I've just learned.
Like, I hear about this lady and I want to shake her.
Right. I know. And I get that, but that's not helpful.
You're right.
It's really more helpful for me. Like, I've turned her around on like three issues in like 2 months. Like, she's a reasonable human being.
And you can't have these conversations with people on social media.
No. No, that's because the impulse to do it in person is so strong. The impulse to do it on social media is uncontrollable. You can't not be a dick.
Yeah.
And they can't not be a dick too. But when you are looking at someone in the face who is kind and sweet and helpful and literally makes my job possible with all of her guidance and help, I'm not about to talk to her like she's a fucking bodunk redneck idiot. She's not. And it's not going to be helpful for me if I talk to her that way anyway. I'm not going to get my point across. The more that I can talk to her in a place where she and I can find some common ground is the way that we bring people along. And I'm telling you it works, and I know it's really hard, and maybe I should like teach a class or something because I'm really good at it. Like, I can find that place where I can use conservative arguments that you believe in to prove, like we talked about marijuana legislation, mm-hmm. and she was really against marijuana legalization. And through the course of about 2 hours, we talked about it, and we talked about, you know, she's a smoker. And I'm like, first of all, you're an adult. Why do you want the government telling adults what they can do with their bodies?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want them to put you in jail for smoking cigarettes because it's bad for you? How about alcohol? Alcohol's way worse than pot. Alcohol causes much more domestic violence, murder, car accidents. And she's like, what about driving while stoned? And I said, that's illegal. Right? So we had this whole conversation, and I didn't come at it from prohibition of drugs is good for reasons that don't matter to her.
Right.
You have to come at it from reasons that do matter to her. Like,
or that she can understand.
Keep the government away from me and less regulation. Mm-hmm. And also she's got kids. So like it helps fund schools,
sure.
which are failing. And like there's ways that you can have this argument with people that you can come at it from a place that they can relate to, and you can start to make common ground. And you don't have to be, you know, you're an idiot and well, you're an idiot. Well, you're a heathen. Like, we don't have to do that.
I think you make an important point, and we get really caught up. And I know I do when I see the horrible, awful Pepe the Frog meme, outright racist Trump supporters. Yes. Now, granted, that is a large part of his voting base.
Yes.
But it's not all of them.
No.
Now, those people, we should not bother reaching.
No, absolutely
not. You cannot
not.
Reach them. I don't want to breathe the same air as them.
Nope.
But I have to be reminded, and I'm glad you're telling me the story of this lady, because it's reminding me there's people like our parents.
Yes.
And maybe our parents are a little more intractable, but there's people like this lady who are reasonable, who yes. are open to discussion and
facts.
A cohesive argument.
Yes.
And we can reach those people.
Yes.
And that's what we should be focusing on.
The best thing that happened yesterday, I came back from my break and she said, "What do you make of this whole Bradley Manning thing?" And I said, "I'd really like to have this conversation with you, but I need you to call her Chelsea Manning and I need you to use she pronouns."
Right.
And she said, "Well, but he was a guy back then and like, how am I supposed to do that?" And I said, "That's fine. But right now her name is Chelsea Manning and she identifies as a woman and I need you to refer to her that way or I'm going to have a really hard time having this conversation with you."
Right.
And she said, "Okay, I'll try." And I said, "Okay, that's all I ask." Right. So I said, "My opinion is that I'm absolutely delighted and heartened and really very grateful that Obama is commuting her sentence." Mm-hmm. And she looked at me like I had four eyes and said, "I'm shocked." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Have you heard the things that she did?" And I think she said he, but you know, she's trying. And she said, "I heard John McCain and he went on this entire rampage about how she's leaked all these national secrets and put national security at risk. And you know, she's got a long history of military service in her family, including mm-hmm. her sons and her husbands sure. and things like that. So sure. she's putting our soldiers at risk and I just can't have it." And I said, "Okay, I want to stop you. I want to ask you if you think there's one set of facts. There's either something that's true or something that's not. And there's just one thing that is a fact." And she said, "Absolutely." And I said, "Okay. Right now, there's floating around two sets of facts." And she's like, "What's the other set of facts?" And I said, "Well, I don't want you to hear it from me because I don't want to get it wrong, but let me find out for you and let me send it to you." So I did some Googling. And I found this really great Slate article that was, you know, why it's good that Obama pardoned Chelsea Manning. And I read it and it is reasonable and factual and sourced. And I sent it to her. And she starts reading it and she keeps looking over at me and she's like, "Oh my, oh my." Right. And about 2 hours later,
well, here,
she
this
looks
is
at
an
me.
Important point. I just want to interrupt. Yeah. Because there's certain people, as soon as you would say Slate, you'd, "Oh, that's liberal media garbage. It's all lies," and they wouldn't read it.
Yeah, no.
But she's open to it.
Yes.
Right.
Because I sent it to her and she's my friend.
Right.
And we agreed that there's one set of facts.
Right.
Right. And this is sourced. And I made sure to say that this, look at the sources. This is factual information.
Right.
So about 2 hours later, she turns to me. We sit right next to each other at work. So we're like within whispering distance, thank God. And she said, "You know what? You're absolutely right. And Obama was right to pardon her. And I'm glad he did. And the things that she did was way less bad than everyone's been saying." And then she goes, "And Paul Ryan's being hysterical." That quote that he said in the middle of the article about how now there's like precedence for people to do this now, that's not true. And none of this is in the article, what she says later.
Right.
But she's quoting that and she says, "That's like saying that just because Obama commuted the sentences of drug dealers that you don't go to jail for dealing drugs anymore." And I was like, "Exactly." And she's like, "So just because Obama commutes the sentence of Chelsea Manning doesn't mean you don't get in trouble for leaking government secrets." And I was like, "Yeah, you should tell Paul Ryan that. You should send him an email and let him know that that's exactly how you feel, because that's exactly right." And she's like, "They're all just being hysterical. Of course she should be released. She's done 7 years." Mm-hmm. And looking at that other guy who did 30, there was some mention of some guy back in the day that did 30 years for like way worse shit.
Yeah.
She was like, "It makes perfect sense that she'd be released. And also, I hope she gets the help she needs, because it said she tried to kill herself a couple times and had a hunger strike." And I said, "That's right." And like, that was it. I just showed her the facts. she read it, she processed it, and she was like, you're right.
Well, that's a conservative person with empathy.
And she has an endless well of that. But that's such a rarity. She's not an ideologue. And there are people out there that just don't know where to look and don't do their own research and don't know what the right thing to look for is. Yeah. And if you can just present them, and they're open-minded enough, if you can just present them with fucking facts and say, this is what is reality. Don't listen to the politicians posturing for political reasons.
Don't listen to the talking points.
Don't listen to the talking points.
The headlines.
Read what happened and tell me what you think.
Yeah. Read the actual stories.
Read the actual facts. Then she's like, no, you're right. I don't know why they're being so hysterical. And I'm like,
and we know
God,
the facts. The facts are on our side. Facts have a liberal bias.
That's correct. Which is why they don't like them. Right. But she's not that person. So I was really, I've been really heartened this week by her, even though we disagree about Trump and we don't talk to each other again. Like she doesn't talk to me like I'm some godless heathen that's going to go to hell. And I don't talk to her like she's some idiot redneck. We just talk about things in a very respectful and open way. And it's been really heartening for me to do that because it shows me that there's hope. And it reminds me of everyone's humanity. And yeah, so it's that part of my last week has been pretty good.
Okay. Well, let's take a lesson from that, right?
Yeah.
If there are people that we know for whatever misguided reasons voted for Trump or voted for Stein or didn't vote, but they are open-minded and, you know, they just need a rational argument, and make sure you have a rational argument and you are armed with facts.
Yeah. And if you don't make shit up.
No.
Go look it up, get the facts, and then present that. That's what I learned. Cause I tried to have a conversation with her without the facts. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm not going to get this wrong. I'm not going to use liberal talking points either.
Right.
I'm going to go figure out exactly why I believe what I believe, because I know I'm right and I've read it before. I just don't remember all the details.
Sure.
So I went and found it. I read it and I was like, yep, that's exactly how I feel. And then I sent it to her and she was like, yeah, that makes sense. And that was it. Like that. Then she's like, that's it. Now she's a convert. It's crazy how
it worked. More than that, it's possibly an inception, right?
Yes.
Because now she learned something. Oh, wait a minute. All these Republican politicians that I trust, they speak with hyperbole and to score political points. Mm-hmm. And if they're saying that about that, what if the things they're saying about Obamacare aren't necessarily the case? And what if the things they're saying about the Iran deal are blown out of proportion? And what about, you know, hopefully those dots start to connect in this person's mind.
Exactly. And the same thing I told you earlier, what happened about Russia.
Yeah.
You know,
tell that story too.
So we were talking about Trump and we were talking about his relationship to Putin in a pretty nonpartisan way, just general personality stuff. And she was saying like, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing if we can be an ally to Russia and we can, you know, work better with foreign countries than we have before. And I said, the thing is, I don't want to work better with him. He's a horrible monster and a dictator, and the human rights abuses that he has committed against his own people are horrifying. And she was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, oh, it's been so well documented, the things that he's doing to his own people. And she was like, what is it? And I was like, okay. So I went on Human Rights Watch and I found the Russia page and I read through it. And it was as horrifying as I thought. And I sent it to her. And she got about 2 paragraphs in. And so the first two are like prohibiting free association and free press.
Right.
But they have these sort of tricky ways of making it seem like it's anti-propaganda or no foreign influence. Like they didn't allow a bunch of NGOs in the country without giving them what they called foreign agent status because they accept foreign money, which is what NGOs do.
Of course.
NGOs are funded by
non-governmental organizations
that are charitable and help people are funded by fucking a lot of different people from a lot of different countries. Mm-hmm. So Russia decided if anyone that was an NGO that was operating inside of Russia took non-Russian money, they would label them as fucking foreign agents.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Sounds a lot like Republican paranoia.
Yeah. And so then they are kicked out of the country, or they, then they're, so then once you're labeled a foreign agent, then you can get raided and you can get jailed. And so a lot of NGOs left Russia. And so she's reading this and the light goes on and she turns to me and she says, so a lot of this stuff they're doing, this is like stuff that our First Amendment protects. And I said, yes, exactly. And she's like, but they're tricky because they're making it seem like these people are doing something against the government or for foreign people, but right. they're not, right? And right. I said, no, they're not. That's exactly right. And she's like, she goes, that seems kind of Hitlerish, right? And I said, yes, it's very fascist and very dictatorial. It's not a democracy over there. And she was like, I'm just making sure. And she keeps reading, right? And I'm just going to let her read. I'm not saying shit. And, we had to leave work before she got all the way to the end, but she turns to me and she says at a certain point, this is horrible. Putin is clearly a monster. And once Trump finds out about this, he is not going to put up with it. He and Putin are not going to be friends anymore. And I said, okay. And she said, and you know what? I was thinking about it and I do believe that it's true. And I said, yeah, me too. And she said, no, but think about this. She said, I think Obama is an exceptional judgment of character. And I think he likes everybody until you give him a reason not to. And I think he probably met Putin and he probably gave him the benefit of the doubt. Like, she's delightful, right? Obama knew all this shit and didn't want Putin. But anyway, I think he probably met Putin, gave him the benefit of the doubt. And when he found this stuff out, that's why they are not close. That's why we have an adversarial relationship with Russia. And when Trump finds out, he is going to get rid of him so fast. He's going to take care of this. And I said, here's my question, though. Took me about 45 seconds to Google this and find it. It is public information. How come he doesn't already know? How come he doesn't read the Human Rights Watch? Or how come nobody's told him? Or do you really think he's never heard this before? Because that would be really shocking to me. And she said, I can't believe he ever would have heard this before and had a kind thing to say about Putin. And I said, I hope you're right, but I think that's very naive. And she said, I said that. And she said, no. You'll see. If he knew this, if Trump knew Putin was doing all of this to his own people, he would be outraged.
Right.
And I said to her, well, I think Trump likes Putin because he seems strong. That's what he keeps saying, right? Strong leader.
Mm-hmm.
He likes him because he's a bully. And Trump responds to that. That's kind of what he wants to be. So I think that's what he likes about him. And she was like, yeah, I mean, strong leaders for sure. But like, not when you hurt your own people. And I was like, well, I hope you're right. I hope against hope that you're right. But I don't think that's true.
Too kind of you.
What am I going to say? You're a fucking idiot. She's not. She's a sweet, kind, very bright woman.
You maybe would need to be a little more blunt at that point and explain. These very things you read are the reason that Trump admires him. And I think what you're going to see over the next few months is more and more praise and defending of him.
But if I say that, I shut her out.
Okay.
You got to trust me on this one. Just trust me. I will guide her along by kindness, empathy, compassion, and meeting her where she is and not berating her with too much.
Well, that's a good policy story or a good present situation story, because there was a bombshell story. It would have been, if not for everything else today, in the New York Times, that they've possibly intercepted communications from Trump's inner circle to Russian officials. I think it was Roger Stone, Manafort, and Cohen or somebody else.
I didn't hear any of this.
No, because everybody's talking about the inauguration. But that dropped to the New York Times today. And here's the thing, though. Who's going to keep investigating it? Like, the Congress could, in theory, but it's controlled completely by Republicans, so they're not going to want to do that.
No.
Trump is going to attempt to gut and or fill I ranted about this ad nauseum on my solo podcast last week.
Which you did not post.
Sorry about that, guys. It's been a rough week
in
many more ways than you can understand.
Yes.
That goes way beyond the Trump shit.
Way beyond, yeah.
But anyway, you know, he's going to, it's going to be like Giuliani hitting the FBI. And I mean, you know, who's going to investigate? Who really is? I mean, some intrepid journalists could.
Yeah. Journalists.
How many do we have left that are really investigative journalists are going to do the work?
I don't know if any, and certainly Congress isn't going to, the DOJ, maybe some intelligence agencies, because they are so at odds with Trump right now that they might do it to spite him. But I can't imagine that we'll really get to the bottom of any of that.
I don't trust Jim Comey to do it.
Fuck no. Fuck that guy.
I mean, each intelligence agency has its own internal politics.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's some pro-Trump people, anti-Trump people, some pro-Russia people, many more anti-Russia people.
Are there pro-Russia people in the intelligence agencies?
Sure, absolutely.
Why?
Because some of them are on the payroll. That's always been the case.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them have undue influence. I mean, it's very complicated, but you would think somebody would want to run down all these leads, especially people who care about foreign influence at the highest levels of American power.
I would hope so.
You would hope so, right?
I would hope. I would.
And
really,
if there's nothing there, great.
Great. Don't worry about it.
But investigate it.
Fucking find out though,
because there's leads.
Yeah.
There's clearly
leads. Yeah. And you know that, you know, in most conspiracies and in most lies, there's a kernel of truth. Mm-hmm. So, not all, but a lot of the time when you hear the same thing over and over and over again from multiple sources, that's probably something that you should be like, let's look at that. You know, it's not like some crackpot on the internet is like, oh, chemtrails are making you feminize or whatever. It's like Russia Trump, Russia Trump, Russia Trump, Russia Trump, over and over from 17,000 different places. It's like, maybe we should look into fucking Russia and Trump. Like, maybe he didn't have hookers piss on him in a hotel room. I don't know.
That's the least of my concerns.
But it seems likely to me that there's some possible business ties, that there's some possible bullfuckery going on there, and with the election for sure. And so,
the most troubling thing is that a lot of his business interests were failing everywhere, what propped him up was Russian mob money, and a lot of this Russian mob money was tied directly to the Kremlin,
and it was debt, right?
Yeah.
So he owes the Russian government a whole lot of money.
The Russian mob and the Russian government. That's the president of the United States. I mean, this is something that needs to be looked into.
I can't today. I have to admit, coming into this morning, like last night, I was all like, whatever, whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. Today was brutal.
Yeah.
It hit me like a crushing, like the gravity of him being sworn in by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at the Capitol as the President of the United States of America. I knew that, of course, but the crushing gravity of that today was just like, I don't know. It hit me like a ton of bricks, way harder than I thought it was going to.
Yeah.
Way harder. My boss too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody I know, really. I had a couple people that were like, I'm numb, but everyone else was just like, what are we doing? We're so fucked. Like,
well, we'll talk more about that in the second half of the broadcast.
Yeah. All right.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere.
Lost my job, that's a new opportunity. More free time for my awesome community. I feel more awesome than an awesome posse. awesome. Dip my body in chocolate frosting. 3 years later, I shot the frosting. Smelling like a blossom, everything is awesome. Stepped in mud, got new brown shoes. Awesome to win, and it's awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose. Awesome to lose.
Hello and welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. It is D-Day, the day of doom, the day of destruction, the day of other words we can think of that start with D.
Donald.
Oh, that's not exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. All right, I have something. Kind of just happened while we were on the break.
Oh.
So, our good friend Molly and regular correspondent, I guess.
Who we're meeting with at the Women's March tomorrow, hopefully.
Absolutely we are. Posted this on Facebook. She said, "There is a peaceful transition of power from the Obama administration to the American people. I'm ready. Are you? Resist."
Okay.
I said, "From one person beholden to the American people to the despot, yeah, I'm ready. We being the most important part of our democracy. Let's go. I'm in." And she said, "We the people, not just words on paper." And I said, "The paper doesn't mean anything if we don't hold its values true and clear and with passionate reverence for their meaning. Hashtag let's march." Then this guy says, "Not sure if y'all understand this, but the people already spoke. They spoke overwhelmingly for Trump. ! End of story. I don't recall Republicans or conservatives rioting or protesting when Obama took office. We just kept working, kept hiring people, kept paying for things, and then we got a chance to say something about it. We did it on the ballot." And I said, "Lol, I seem to remember something about the Tea Party."
Yeah.
Really? Republicans didn't protest fucking Obama? Or is that a joke? Is he trolling me? But I've heard this. This is not the first time I've heard this. This has been all over Twitter and all over Fox News.
Yeah, we don't protest. And why are you people protesting?
This is a peaceful transition of power. We didn't protest you. I'm like, I'm sorry. Go back a minute. You didn't protest President Obama? Barack Hussein Obama?
There weren't town halls. And
there weren't protests with guys wearing wigs, holding racist signs. And come on. That's all it was for the first year.
Yeah, and we laughed and said, "Isn't that stupid?" But we didn't say, "Geez, you guys shouldn't be doing that. Like, do whatever you want."
No, we said you're racist because they were. And we said, okay, we're going to go on to making policy now. But do your thing. I think we also underestimated them largely.
Sure.
Because the Tea Party was very effective.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
especially for midterm elections.
And for blocking any congressional action that could have happened in the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
The Tea Party, in fact, was so effective that this is going to be a good transition to the next thing I want to talk about, which is indivisible. So I think we talked about this a couple podcasts ago. There was a bunch of former congressional staffers who got together and wrote a memo essentially about what worked for their, these are Democratic congressional staffers, during the last 8 years, what worked to persuade their congressperson that they worked for.
Right.
And what didn't, and what tactics worked. And they basically made this beautiful outline of what you should do. And basically they're saying, we should use the exact same tactics that the Tea Party used against Obama, against Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this lovely sort of document with just all these bullet points. And they say in it, like, we're not going to do these things. This is just an outline for political action, direct political action, because we're just congressional staffers,
yeah,
who are out of job. So don't ask us to do anything. But here's a good outline of what works and what doesn't. And so that happened.
We should read that on the show at some point.
Yes, we should. So that happened right after the election, a couple, mm-hmm, like a couple weeks later. And then that sort of morphed into this website called indivisible.org.
Okay.
And they're still not doing anything, but they are. There is a link on there that says find your local chapter. Mm-hmm. So I did. There are 68 groups.
In Denver proper?
Within 100 miles of Denver. Mostly they're in Denver. There's some in Boulder. There's some in Lafayette and Longmont and Greeley and whatever. None in Lakewood, interestingly.
None, huh?
No.
You'll have to start one.
No, I don't think so. So a friend of ours named Melly posted about it, and that's what caught my eye. So I went on there, and I looked, and there were 68. And she had joined one, so I just asked her, which one did you join? And looked at their Facebook group and then joined it. And it is a way to get involved that is direct political action. The one that I chose, that she chose, that we talked about, they seem committed. They seem organized. They seem like they're trying to form a structure so that it's not like the Nasty Women movement or the Pantsuit Nation. It's not that. This is direct political action at a local grassroots level.
Okay.
And it's
exactly
about
what we're talking about all the time.
Yes. And it's exactly what we are railing about all the time and exactly what we do in our personal lives. So I think it would be great if I could get anybody listening to do that. And maybe we can post.
Well, we'll talk to Melly about it tomorrow,
in the
hopefully.
Show notes about where to find your local group and start organizing, because
we always talk about things in the show notes and then I forget. So you're going to have to
remind me
exactly when I'm doing it.
Okay. Well, just tell me.
Okay.
But
I'll have to remember to tell you so that you can remind me to do the thing.
I'll just remind you. Yeah. Anyway, so the thing that's important about this is not that the thing we're always yelling about, which is that local politics matter. That's true. This is more, if you feel powerless today and you feel small and you feel like there's nothing you can do and you feel like the world is being, the rug's being swept out from underneath your feet.
Mm-hmm.
This is a way to get involved really directly and impactfully with people who are using a model that worked, obviously in a gross way against Obama, but if, you know, we can use those same tactics because they work.
Well, we have to be pragmatic. You know, obviously we tried the whole ideological purity thing on our side. It didn't really work for us.
No, it did not.
So maybe now's the time for everybody to be pragmatic, to stop.
The end of the republic? Like, we're not talking about, I hate the black guy. We're talking about, I hate the fascist. I'm reading The Handmaid's Tale, and I know it's going to be shocking for any of you that have read it that I haven't read it before, but I got to the part of the book today where they explain how they got there, how we went from a normal world to the world that she lives in, and it was so terrifying because it seemed so plausible.
Yeah.
Given the state of affairs.
Well, there was also the undercurrent of the radiation from nuclear wars made all the men sterile and other stuff like that, but
yeah. Well, but the sort of slow progression of how you, the slow progression was the terrifying part, because that's the part that is what's going to happen. Not gonna, but God damn it. I'm reading it and I'm like, yeah.
That could happen.
Yeah. It's very, very possible. And it was so terrifying, in fact, that I had to stop reading it, at work in order to not have a panic attack. But, we can't. And the point of the take home I got from reading that part of the book was like how much she had normalized it at the time, describing her own behavior during the slow progression and the slow taking of rights, that by the time she got to there, you know, women can't have money anymore and all these things, she just felt numb. That's what we can't do. We have to understand at every moment and at every step that is horrifying, it can't be too overwhelming, and it also can't be something that's like, well, I'm sure there's a reason. Like, it has to be, this is not normal, this is not okay, I will not put up with this. Every minute of every day, we have to be vigilant, because it is how, you know, these things happen. It is how fascism happens, is that you just go, I'm sure the government has a reason, or maybe I am against that too. you know, but you cannot slowly let the government erode away your rights and think, well, it doesn't affect me today, or I'm sure they have a reason or whatever. You have to be ever vigilant and ever angry, I guess, and take action whenever that stuff happens. And the first step to doing that is to march and to say, we're here and we want you to know how many of us there are and we're not going to be ignored. And the second step, because marches are good. Marches have, that's an American political tradition.
They're a good catalyst. They're not a solution unto themselves.
No, they are not. The second step is to join a group like some chapter of Indivisible, which says, okay, here's what we're going to do in our community, in our local community with our city council people, our mayors, our state representatives, and our national representatives and senators. We're going to say, you know, here's this action steps that we're going to take to contact them, to affect them. Here's the message we want to send, and it needs to be cohesive. And that is what worked for the Tea Party, and it's what can work for us, I think.
Well, it has to.
We're going to make it. We're going to do the, I mean, well, I can't make anything happen. I can try to will it, but I can take as much action as I possibly can in the time that I have to work with my local community and to affect real change. Emailing Donald Trump or tweeting at him is not going to help.
No.
Yelling at Pepe the
Twitter in general is sort of mental masturbation. Now, granted, it is the president, the new president's main form of communication.
Yeah.
But you still have a very small portion of Americans even use Twitter,
correct,
let alone get their news from it.
Yes. And tweeting at Donald Trump isn't going to make him change his mind.
No.
So we don't get to start with
Damn
Donald
it.
Trump. You got to start with what is your school board doing?
Yeah.
What is your city council person doing?
Right.
What is your mayor doing? What is the state rep in your district doing?
Speaking of city council. It's another show.
Yeah. Everybody wants me to run. I don't know. I have a lot of feelings about it, but speak to those people and speak to them directly and in person, and don't feel like you aren't important enough to talk to people who represent you. The whole point of representative democracy is that these people work for you. You elected them, even if you didn't vote for them. The point of representative democracy is that they represent you because you're in their district or their city or their county or their state or their country. Like, they represent you. So you have every right and every responsibility, I think, to call them and tell them exactly how you feel. How can they represent you if they don't know what you want and what you need and what your concerns are? It's your job. It's your job, as Obama would say, as a citizen, which is the most important job that you have, to reach out to people who represent you in government and tell them what your concerns are, what your doubts are, what your fears are, what your needs are, and how you want them to vote. They represent you, and they have one vote that represents that entire whatever it is. So it's your responsibility to let them know what that is.
Yeah.
Don't feel intimidated. And by the way, the people that answer their phones are super nice. They're like,
usually
obligated to be super nice.
Yeah.
Unless you're Cory Gardner. It's fine. They just don't answer the phone there.
Let's talk about Obama for a second.
Yeah.
Him and the fam are going to go on vacation.
Yeah.
And then his literal message is, as soon as we get back, we're going to get to work.
Yes. Did you see Obama.org?
No, not yet.
Oh, my God.
Well, look, here's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that once he is free from the constraints of
politics,
well, of presidential politics, certainly, I think you are going to see a much more unfiltered,
yes,
direct, very sharp-tongued, probably kind of funnier, maybe more sarcastic, give no F's Obama. And I'm kind of looking forward to it. I mean, he's still going to be a statesman.
I wish that were true.
I think it might be. I mean,
I think it might be. That's my would be the greatest joy of my life.
Let's think about, remember, I don't know if you're if I'm just too old that I remember this, but when Bob Dole lost in 96, and then I think soon after he quit the Senate, if I remember correctly, he finally retired.
Yeah, I was like 13, so I don't remember.
He finally retired. But they started interviewing him, and all of a sudden, he was a funny guy. He was funny. He had quips. He was sarcastic. And the media is just like, well, where did this come from? He's like, well, I was a politician. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, now I can like, and he was, I mean, he's a Trump supporter, unfortunately, but he said some funny things about how terrible Ted Cruz was back during the primary.
Mm.
And I'm kind of thinking like, yeah, I could maybe see Obama do that because he's been having to stifle it for so long, you know?
Yes. But I also, here's the only reason I, first of all, I hope that's fucking true because that man's already hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Not just his dad jokes, but like his sense of comedic timing is unparalleled in presidential history, I'm pretty sure. However, I think Obama thinks a lot about his legacy, and not in an ego-driven way, but in a way that is like, I can't be the angry black guy or the sarcastic asshole or the Joe Biden or the, you know what I mean? Like he really has to, he looks at his image,
yes,
not for himself, I don't think.
Yes, but.
But I think he looks at his image to say, my message is more important than my ego, and my message will get lost if I let my ego take over and start being snarky.
As president, yes. As former president?
I don't know.
They expect you to play golf and paint pictures of dogs and show up to charity events.
That's what George Bush did. Well, Clinton has an international global foundation that's helped millions of people.
And the Obamas are going to do something similar. But I'm talking about particularly in American politics.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's going to be a very strong voice.
I hope so.
And that is partially going to be trying to protect his legacy. He doesn't want Trump and the Republicans to undo everything. They'll try in 4 years.
Yes.
They won't be able to, you know, unravel everything.
I think they'll be able to do whatever the fuck they want because we gave them everything. The Supreme Court, the House, the Senate, and the White House. We have no leg to stand on. They'll do
whatever
they want for at least the next 2 years. Yeah. And in 2 years, you can get a lot done if you have no resistance.
There's not no resistance. There's not nearly enough resistance.
We are the resistance.
Yeah.
And what we have to do is make our Congress people be our voice for that resistance.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be it too. But the important thing is that we make the people that represent us also be that resistance. I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans. You know how many Democrats caved to the Tea Party?
Oh, yeah.
So let's make some Republicans cave to us. And let's stop some of this nonsense.
Yeah, and use Trump's unpopularity against him.
Yes.
He's coming in as the least popular president to take office ever, I think.
In American history. That's correct. Like, unpopular presidents leave with his rating.
Right.
He's entering the White House with 37%.
Something like that, yeah.
It's crazy. So, that's really important. Obama.org happened today. It is, there's a little video at the top with Michelle and Barack, and they're like, we want to hear your input. They're like, legit, we're going to take a break.
They've heard it.
We need a minute. Michelle says that part. She's like, minute. Fucking give me a minute. Like, swear to God. She doesn't say it that way, but that is her face.
Sure.
And then they're like, we want to hear what you think this should be, because this isn't about us. This foundation, the Obama Foundation is what it's called. Is just as much yours as it is ours. So it's going to be in the south side of Chicago is where it's based. But it's going to be a nationwide organization that's going to try to do good. Because, of course, it is. And that's great. I have another thing to plug. Y'all know I love Dan Savage.
Mm-hmm.
He's my very favorite.
I haven't been hearing his take on stuff recently. I haven't caught up the last few months.
I hadn't either because I've been just been a fucking nightmare. So I took refuge in his Twitter feed today. I didn't get on Twitter much. And when I did, I was like, I'm just going to go look at Dan Savage. And I kept seeing these pins and bumper stickers and T-shirts that said, ITMFA. Now, if you know Dan Savage, you know dump the motherfucker already. DTMFA mm-hmm. is a thing he says all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a bad relationship. You write him for advice. Usually it's you asking for permission to dump somebody.
Right.
Or you're so lost in this horrible abusive relationship that you don't see that the obvious answer is dump the motherfucker already, right?
Right.
So when I started to see the I instead of the T and people were wearing it as buttons and t-shirts, I was like, I am way behind. What is this?
Right.
So I scrolled through a little bit and went back a little bit. Dan Savage has created a website that is called impeachthemotherfuckeralready.org.
It's quick.
Uh-huh. And buttons and t-shirts that say IMTF. Yeah. The acronym. Impeach the motherfucker already, but in letters. and it made me really happy.
Are there t-shirts?
There are t-shirts. There are pins.
I'm gonna get one
there
for
are
the band
hats.
Wear on stage.
You should get one for, yes.
They have one in black?
Of course. With all white lettering.
All right, perfect.
Dan Savage. He only wears t-shirts, so. Even to like MSNBC.
Well, because, you know, he's got good arms to show off.
Well, and he just doesn't understand that you're supposed to wear a suit when you're on the news. He just wears a t-shirt and a hoodie and jeans.
He gives no fucks.
He's Dan Savage. You want to talk to me or no? I'll be in the
t-shirt. Speaking of which, Rick Santorum got his own show on CNN. Or is he a show or is he just a contributor? I literally never watched CNN, so I don't know.
CNN.
But I saw that on Twitter.
I think it used to be a reputable news organization.
Well, now it's got Jeff Lord, Corey Lewandowski, Rick Santorum, and...
Whatever.
You know.
Fuck them. I don't care. I just... So just like, whatever. I've stopped caring about CNN, like, about 2009. So.
I've stopped caring about all of them, really. I don't even watch MSNBC anymore.
You know, you and I used to, on date nights, we'd, like, make dinner and watch MSNBC and then watch something fun, like a movie. And now it's like... No, I'm not watching the news. Are you? No, fuck no. Like, we're not watching the news tonight. That's so depressing. Like, I can't.
I mean, we're going to have to soon because
I know.
When the scandals for President Trump start erupting, we're going to need to follow those. If they're going to be scandals, it's kind of up to the media to decide whether, you know, all these, the Russian communications between, you know, Roger Stone saying Trump dump the money here and then delete the piss tape or whatever it is that the NSA has. Like, if they decide that's a story, you know, that worth covering.
I mean, this is why
it's not Hillary's emails and that somebody once asked for a favor they didn't get. I realize that's much bigger than
and
like.
Can we talk about the difference?
The president
between,
being in hock to the Russians.
I think there are three things that we need to distinguish between right now: fake news, the mainstream media, and independent news.
And most people don't know the difference.
So fake news...
is literally fake news.
Is literally fake news. There was this incredible article from the New York Times where they got this guy to be interviewed. He's like this 26-year-old guy.
Not even a Republican.
He is a Republican.
Oh, is he? I thought he wasn't.
I think so. Actually, I don't care. He's a piece of shit. And he literally said, like, if it had been more... if I thought I could make more money... writing fake news about Trump, I would have done that, but I knew for sure that Trump supporters were more likely to believe the fake news I wrote, so I wrote it about Trump.
Of course.
Or Hillary.
Of course.
So his big fake news scandal that broke him and made him thousands of dollars was the fake news article about some janitor or electric worker or something finding all of these boxes of ballots for Hillary Clinton before the election in Ohio.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And it got circulated everywhere.
Yeah, I remember.
It was a big deal.
I remember.
He literally goes through.
And it sounded so stupid that I thought even the hardiest Trump supporters aren't going to run with this.
Everybody ran with it because
of course.
It's Ohio. It's Hillary Clinton doing something unfair.
Yeah.
It's proving that Donald Trump can't win because he can only win if Hillary steals it.
Right.
And it's like, he literally goes through the motions, though, and he's like, I made up this name for this reason. I picked Ohio for this reason. He picked this, he pulled a picture of something from like 2002 or something. I don't know.
That shit always works with those idiots.
And it says ballot box on it. And there's this like white dude standing behind it with like six ballot boxes. And he literally goes through the motions of how he made up the story and what he thought people would be most likely to believe.
I'm semi-envious. Like if I knew it wouldn't it change the outcome of the election, then I would do it and make money off these idiots.
Yeah. So he goes through this whole thing in the New York Times. And he was resistant at first, but he went through this whole thing and exactly how he did it and why he didn't, why he made the decisions he made about what things he said.
Mm-hmm.
And it got like 6 million views or something. Like it was insanely, insanely popular. And who knows how many shares and how many people saw it from whatever. And they ask him later, how do you feel about the fact that you just made shit up and people believed it? And he made up a bunch more shit than that, right? Like tons of stuff. None of them were as viral as the ballot box because he had like a picture and it was a plausible story. And he said, it was so interesting. He said, well, I mean, all news is biased. Look at Fox News. Look at MSNBC. They're all biased. They're all liars. And so are politicians. So why does it matter if I am? Like, he doesn't understand the basic pretense of journalism. Like, what is journalism? It's, we're living in a different world now.
Well, Fox sometimes does make shit up whole cloth.
Yeah, they
and they recirculate that asshole's stories too.
Yeah, they do. And they have been taken to court for it, and the courts have vindicated them and said this is entertainment, not news.
Yeah.
That was their argument. We're allowed to lie to the American people because we're entertainment and not news. And the court said, okay. But they said that Fox News said literally out loud in a court transcript that I have a copy of, we are not news, we are entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be able to say whatever we want, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. And the court said, okay.
Yeah.
Because you defined yourself as not news. So, anyway, that's a really good piece. I think it's called Inside Fake News or something like that. But it's on the New York Times.
It wasn't like the first story about the guy. Mother Jones ran something like a month ago.
But this is an interview with
him. Yeah. Well, they got a few quotes from him in that other story. But yeah, this is like the full on.
Yeah, it's
thing.
Like a full rundown of exactly what went through his brain and why he did what he did and how he did it and how he made money, which was mostly advertisers. And
through then he Macedonia, got a, right?
Was no, no, no. This is like this is not that. This is a American.
Because there
dude
were fake kids in Macedonia.
Yeah. This is just some fake. This is just a dude living in New York City who decided to make fake news.
Was it New York City?
I think it was. I don't know.
No, I don't think it was New York City.
I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But just he's an American dude. He's like a 26-year-old fraternity guy who
saw an opportunity.
Yeah. And he made money off of the ads, and then he got a appraisal of the internet site before, right after the election, and it was like valued at like $200,000. And then people, I forget what the like kind of watershed moment was, but there was like some news conference and someone started talking about fake news. And all of his advertisers pulled out and he got another appraisal and they said it's basically worthless. So if he had sold it right before the election was over, when he got it appraised, he could have made like 200.
He figured the fake news racket could have kept going.
Yeah.
Well, it will. It'll just be in some other form.
Right. But
because the advertisers will follow the money.
So Google announced after whatever this event was, and I'm sorry, you guys, I can't remember what it was, that they would no longer sponsor ads or allow ads to be on fake news sites.
Yeah. Great.
And after
now.
That, it, the dominoes kind of crumbled and his news site's worth nothing. And it was also, by the way, called like Christian World News, I think.
Of course.
And he was going to sell it for like 200 grand, but he was like, I'm going to wait. Cause what if he wins, you know? And then after everything happened, it's worth nothing now. And now he's like trying to be like a political analyst and like some bullshit. I don't
know. CNN will hire him.
Yeah, probably. Or focus
he'll
on the
be on the Rick Santorum hour.
Who fucking knows? But the guy's a piece of garbage and he feels no remorse. He's like, no, I mean, people believe what they want to believe. And like, everyone lies, so why shouldn't I? And it's like, wow, no, but
okay. Is he a piece of garbage, or are our American peers the garbage for just turning their brain off and uncritically accepting obvious crap just because it feeds into their preconceived
ideas? I think that's a valid question. My response would be two things. My reptile brain is like, yes, they're all garbage. But I think that when you live in a world that we've lived in this country, where the news media is free and honest and fair for so long, and you know what you see on Fox News might not be true. Or not that you think it's not true, but you understand, or even MSNBC, like, I sometimes watch Rachel Maddow and I'm like, whoa, you oversimplified that. It's much more nuanced.
She gets things wrong sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, you got that wrong. Yeah. But I call her out on that. Yeah. I don't expect everyone to do that.
Right.
When you live in a society where the press is so sort of honored and dignified and like such a part of the fabric of our culture, and then you bring social media into that, and then you... people write fake news stories that seem real. I think it won't happen again because of this election cycle, but I think it was, I think it's unfair.
There's money in it, Rachel.
I'm saying, I don't think the American people are going to put up with it again. Maybe I'm wrong and maybe I'm naive, but I think, don't patronize me.
I'm not patronizing.
I think that this is the first time, right? And I think people were legitimately surprised when they found out that that news article was false. Who among us who has a full-time job and two kids and a spouse and a house and a car and a lawn to mow sources every article that they read? You and I are fucking politics nerds.
Yes,
and
but
we
yeah.
are...
Yes, but
actively trying to make sure that we are accurate and stuff. Like, we are people who do that.
Okay.
Your average person who works for a living.
Hold on a second, Rachel.
No. Let me finish my fucking sentence. Who works for a living and has kids and like has shit. They're scheduled literally from like 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. And they see a news article come up and it seems pretty plausible and it's really well written. Goes, I need to source that.
Was it really well written? Were any of these stories really well written?
Well written enough to pass, because some of them got reported on major news websites. Major news.
Because they already had 100,000 clicks or whatever.
Now, this is what I'm saying. This is not the fault of your average Joe for being an idiot. This is the fault. No, you cannot. Like, I do not expect every person I know to be as political as I am.
Rachel,
I know it's not possible.
Rachel.
I expect the fucking media to do their job and say, this story has 100,000 clicks. The headline is false reporting by XYZ of this. Not, is this true? Question mark. Like, I want to hear people say, this is false reporting. This was false. I want a Washington Post to run an article that says, 100,000 people just read this article. This is bullshit. This is wrong. False reporting of XYZ. Like, I want the legitimate news media to report on false news. I want them to say, hey, guys, this is not true.
Well, the Washington Post and New York Times can't even get their own shit right. Because they wrote headlines that said,
so
there's no link between Trump and Russia a week before the election.
Your average Joe to
hold on a second.
If the Washington Post can't
figure
it out.
Hold on a second. Are we giving up on any level of critical thinking? If someone forwarded you an article that said cherry Kool-Aid cures cancer, you would just buy it whole cloth if it was well written?
No. But no one's forwarding anything. People are posting things on social media that look like they're from legitimate news sites that are written like a journalist wrote them, and they're from a trusted friend who got it from a trusted friend.
And
if your trusted friend
posts something on your Facebook that looks like a legitimate news site and it says leprechauns are in trees handing out pots of gold, you're going to buy it?
This happened to both you and Dana and me. All three of us fell for fake news last year.
Once. And then we had a mea culpa, so, and we felt like idiots. We did not forward it to 8,000 people.
No, but if you and me and Dana both fell for one fake news story, can we really blame a single mom in Detroit with three kids who went on Facebook and was like, "Ah, shit, Hillary really is an asshole." You can't. Like, that's not their job. They have shit to do. Our shit to do is go to work and talk about politics. Their shit to do is way more. And if they think it's legitimate, now we know fake news exists. So
what does the mom in Detroit? She may have missed this. She didn't read this story.
Okay, here's my problem. Let's finish with that story. Let me just finish that thought. So I'm not blaming her. I'm also not blaming Tad in Ohio, who doesn't know anything. Like, I'm not blaming these people. They didn't do their research. Not everybody has time to fucking research everything. I blame the media for perpetuating these myths. Secondarily, we're having a new problem, which is we are now defining fake news as news we don't agree with. Fake news is actually fake news written by people to be fake.
That's what Trump is calling fake news, as news he doesn't like.
Okay, but Obama did it recently. He said something about something fake news, and I was like, don't say fake news. What you mean is political lying. What you said is fake news.
I don't know what he was referring to.
I can't remember at the moment.
You sure he wasn't actually referring to some fake news?
He was not.
Okay.
Not the fake news that we're talking about, where like a Macedonian teen writes an article, or some douchebag frat boy from Harvard
writes
an article.
Clinton has a sex ring at a pizzeria.
Yes. He's talking about false news. He's talking about manipulating facts to make it meet your opinion. That's not fake news. Okay,
let me tell you why it isn't going away. Whether it's well-meaning people getting sucked in or total idiots, either way, there is a market for fake news that fits preconceived notions or jumps on urban legends or is what people want to hear because they really, really don't like the other candidate in the political campaign. And if you can write a story that the other candidate had sex with the goat and, you know, whatever, and you can get 100,000 hits from it, and so-and-so advertiser sees your website is getting 100,000 hits and he wants to put ads on there because he'll get 100,000 eyeballs on it, there's a market for it.
Yes.
So Google can shut it down or try to shut it down. Yes, it's not going away because now there's a market for it, Rachel. This is the wonderful flip side of
the wonderful world of capitalism.
Of capitalism.
Which, you know, I'm the biggest fan of capitalism.
If there is a market for it, it is going to continue to thrive no matter how much you try to outlaw it.
All right. I hate everything.
I wish that was correct. And maybe it'll be tougher next time around. That maybe
they'll just have to get smarter.
Maybe news agencies
more clever
and Googles are more vigilant about it.
Maybe news organizations could do their fucking job.
The news organizations were as bad as any because they knew
were the worst.
They knew that what would get the most clicks is something about Hillary and email and something about Clinton Foundation.
And not
didn't matter if the story was a nothing burger.
Policy?
Who wants to read about policy?
Like, I'm kind of with Donald Trump that the mainstream media is fucking garbage.
Well, he's right for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, completely. Right? Like, we have common ground that they are fucking garbage and I'm tired of them. Mm-hmm. We just come at it from totally different angles.
Right.
But we don't disagree. Like, I don't even watch it. I don't listen to anything. Like,
the New
I
York Times,
even,
like, they still write good articles, but they also have written disastrous, embarrassing articles that they've never walked back.
I know.
And the Washington Post, too.
I know.
You know?
I mean, I still depend on them, to be honest.
I know, because where else are we going to go?
Where the fuck else am I? NPR, but like...
Mother Jones, they don't post that many articles all the time. You know.
I don't know, you guys.
Raw story. I mean, we love Sarah Burst, but it's very short, you know, digestible sound bites almost, their articles. Mm-hmm. No offense, Sarah.
No, Sarah's are lovely, and she's amazing. And she's going to the Women's March in Washington.
Awesome. So, is that also tomorrow?
Yeah. Yeah. She wanted me to go with her, and I wanted to very badly, but with my job, I could not go to D.C. this weekend.
So closing thoughts here, wrapping up on this night of
horrors. Okay, I've got a couple closing thoughts. Going back to our earlier conversation about my conservative friend.
Mm-hmm.
And all the hope and light and love there about you can turn people, right?
You can turn Darth Vader back to the...
I would say there are some things in which you cannot.
Sure.
And one of those things for us was abortion.
Yeah.
And so when I start from a place of shout your abortion and it's a public health access issue, and she starts from a place of why do women get to kill people and no one else does? Mm-hmm. You're baby murderers. You're not going to get anywhere on that, so don't even try. That just becomes a topic you don't talk about.
You could at least sideways get there through more access to contraception.
I did that.
Right.
Comprehensive sex education and health insurance and access to contraception.
Right.
And she can't get past murdering babies, so you're not going to get anywhere on stuff like that.
Right.
So don't get stuck there. Move on to something that you can
find common ground.
If there is something that you're at killing babies and I'm at shout your abortion, don't try. That's so far, like we're never going to get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Start small. Start on the stuff that you can find common ground. Second of all, sorry that we have to say President Trump now. And today was hard.
We could just call him Trump or Donald.
Or orange fascist.
Cheeto Jesus.
Small hands, small dick, orange fascist, piece of shit, garbage pile.
They'll know who you're talking about.
I mean,
our audience will know who you're talking about.
I don't know that I can do the President Trump thing.
Just call him Trump.
I don't know if I can even do that. So I'm really sorry, everybody. And if it hit you hard today too, especially if you didn't expect it. I didn't expect it. But the pomp and circumstance of it really hit me. And it was rough. Third, please do get involved. I know we always say that, but it's fucking crucial right now. It's critical to get involved locally. That's how they beat back every progress we tried to make with Obama, and that's how we'll beat back every fascist thing Trump tries to do. So we're going to post in the show notes, because I'm going to remind Travis and make sure he does it, indivisible.org. Go to find local groups and find one and see what you can do to help them and see how you can get involved. And it's going to be really boring stuff. Like, you need to go to your city council person's office and ask them questions and tell them how you feel. Or go to a protest outside of your state senator's office and tell them how you feel. Mm-hmm. Or make a phone call or 7 phone calls. Like, it's not sexy work, but it's the work that makes things happen. So I really want to encourage you guys to do that, because I think that it's the only thing that makes a difference.
Okay.
What are your closing thoughts?
No, just echoing what you said. I think if you can find common ground with somebody who voted for Trump or is on the other political side of the aisle, but is open to reason and reasoned, logical discussion, without yelling and screaming.
Try to channel me.
Yeah. Try to channel Rachel if you can. I know I will. Check that out in the show notes. We're going to tell you all about the Women's March that we attend tomorrow for next week's show.
That's one last thing really quick. When you go to the march, if you go to any march anywhere in the country, make sure to write your contact information of your emergency contact on your arm in Sharpie should something happen to you. Make sure your phone is charged as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Hydrate, pee whenever you can, eat before you go, stay on the edges, and rage in solidarity.
Okay, that's it for now. Hang in, guys. We will be the voice of... Well, we are not the only voice of the resistance. We are some of the voices in the resistance, and we're going to keep telling you what and how, and you don't need to know why to resist. We'll give you the how, though. Okay, that's it. I have been Travis. That's been...
I'm Rachel.
And we'll see you next week. Stay active, stay tuned, and more than ever, stay involved. Adios.
She said, you're